This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, August 14th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become better than average. And this is an open conversation about your money and the goals that you have. And each person's different, but for most Americans, and investing for decades is their goal, not for just days, right? We talk about how stocks gyrate up and down, but over every 15-year period since World War II, stocks have made money for investors. Often a lot of money, sometimes just a little bit, but it's all about understanding how to succeed in the long term. Everyone's going to have short-term fluctuations in performance and how they do and how they do compared to the market. But ultimately, it's about what matters over the long term, how to outperform over the long term and be better than the average person. So, you know, we're here to try to even out the emotions and provide some useful information for you and perspective and try to answer your questions live during our 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. You can call in, ask your question, or you can always call in on the leave a message, and we'll answer it on the next show on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, and we'll go to that in a moment. But today, we're going to talk about alternative investments like currencies, commodities, real estate, private equity, even art or collectibles. Are they right for your portfolio? What do you need to know before you buy? That's our main talking point today. And I'll get to a few more that I'm going to touch on later in the hour. But let's check out our 24-hour listener line calls right now. It is open for your question.
Hi, Steve, Justin. This is Sam from New Jersey. Love your show. I'm a big fan. What are some of the advantages and downsides of reinvesting dividends? I wasn't sure whether I should be reinvesting my dividends or whether I should cash them. I just wanted to get some input from you. Look forward to hearing your feedback. Thanks.
All right. It's a great question. It's certainly something that you have to think about when you are investing in the markets. You're probably going to invest in some stocks and maybe some bonds that pay you income. And typically he's talking about dividend income and whether you want to take that money and automatically roll that back into the stock. And what are the pros and the cons? Well, the pros of taking that money and just buying more stock with it is, A, you're hopefully, unless your broker's set up differently, you're hopefully avoiding any commission charges of buying more shares. So that's a positive. You are not having to think about it. All you have to do is... you don't have to do anything, really. You check that box, you put that setting on your account, and it automatically reinvests every time you get a cash flow from a dividend. So those type of investing mechanisms that you don't have to constantly think about is usually a good way to build wealth over time and compound your income, your investments, right? Compound your returns over time. Now, the downside is when you get those cash flows in, you don't know whether that stock is undervalued or overvalued. So you may be buying more shares at a higher price and when you really want to be reducing your exposure to that particular stock. But it's kind of like a small dollar cost averaging into the stock if you do reinvest it. Now, for our clients, we like to be in control of that money and reinvest it at the proper valuation an attractive valuation. So for us, we keep that, we let that go into cash. We don't automatically reinvest those dividends. So it's it depends on how active you are, how focused you are on managing your portfolio. If you're more active and more attentive to your account, then you probably want that to go to cash so you can be in more control of that cash. If you don't want to think about it very much, then you probably just want to keep reinvesting those dividends, especially if you kind of have a core holding that's paying you dividends regularly and you want to just reinvest over time. Now, we've talked about the differences between growth and value investing, and where do you look if you're looking for growth? Well, emerging markets is one of those areas that you could that offer some attractive traits, and one trait that developed countries don't have, and that's typically high growth. And emerging economies are expected to grow 2 to 3 times faster than developed nations, according to the IMF. And one of the reasons why U.S. companies have done so well over the past few years is because of their exposure to growing emerging markets. So investing in emerging markets doesn't always have to be about buying stocks in emerging markets. It could be buying domestic companies that are growing their sales in emerging markets. Think of Apple, right? They grew their sales in China dramatically over the last 10 years or so. Now it's kind of slowing down, but that's one example of how you can invest domestically for growth overseas. Now, around 70% of the world growth will come from emerging markets, with China and India accounting for about 40% of that. So this could result in a huge boom time for these economies. But the question always is, are valuations already too high? So growth is one factor, and that goes with individual companies or countries as a whole. And it's nice to participate in the growth of a developing country, but it's, once again, it's not the only factor. There are risks involved. Maybe that growth is already priced in. And that happens with countries as well as companies. You know, think of Amazon back in the first dot-com bubble, right? It crashed spectacularly because of the growth that was already priced in that didn't happen for a decade and a half later, right? For that to really pick up. And it took many years for that to fully get back to where it was during the first dot-com bubble. And so that's an extreme example, but it's an example that it could be still a good long-term investment, but you could be investing at very, very expensive prices. And it's what is called price to perfection. And so you have to label emerging markets, especially in this market, as high risk in any market, but you know, when things are a little frothy like we are in times right now, emerging markets have more volatility and have a higher risk. But if you're looking long term in valuations, it's still better than what we're getting here in America. So valuations are always relative, not only to the past in relation to where that particular country or stock is traded based on price to earnings, price to GDP on a country standpoint, price to sales on an individual business standpoint. So there's those relative valuations. And then where is it trading relative to other investments out there in the marketplace today? So there's always two relative types of metrics that you need to study and that are important in your decision-making process. Now, should you avoid emerging markets altogether just because they're high risk? Not necessarily. If you're a very long-term investor and you can handle high risk, it could be a good place for you to be. But you don't want to put more than, you know, 10, 15% of your portfolio in that area. But it can help diversify your portfolio, lower your overall risk without lowering your overall long-term reward. And in fact, if you're investing at more attractive prices relatively, you can actually boost your return long-term. Now, do you have more questions about growth investing versus value investing? Maybe emerging markets? What are the risks in emerging markets? It's not just valuation. What about currency risk? What about political risk? So I'm ready to help in any way I can. 8899-CHART. Let's get back to the phones and take any question from our 24-hour listener line. Do we have time for a caller? Okay, we're going to go to a quick break. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time each and every weekday. 8899-CHART is how to get through. And let's talk about your money. How do you make sure your portfolio is in sync with your overall plan? Do you rebalance it? Buy a little, sell a little to get back on the target. Got a question about rebalancing? Adjusting your proper risk tolerance, risk level? Let's talk about it on Invest Talk.
Yes, this is Mark calling from San Diego. I have a small position in Aflac, AFL, and it's up about 24%. I'm thinking of either adding to it or selling it. I would like your insight. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. He's looking at Aflac. I think most people know who Aflac is. Certainly one of the largest insurance companies, workplace insurance companies in the world. About a $32 billion market cap. So large, but not gigantic. Let's say that. Their headquarters is in Georgia. But they're actually a Japanese-based company. And their earnings are doing pretty well. They're up 35% year over year last quarter, but revenues remain fairly flat, which is kind of a worry for me. Its operating to earnings yield is about 12.3. That's pretty good. That's a nice yield on earnings. Their debt is enterprise value is about equal to its market cap, which means that they have very, very little debt. I like that. It's certainly going up because earnings are starting to turn around from fourth quarter of last year and first quarter of this year. Earnings were down. And that was, I think, worrisome in this last quarter. It was up 12%, even though revenue is now is flat. So they're finding ways to squeeze out more profit. But if you look at since 2011, they really haven't made much more money. 2011, they made $6.27, went up a little the next, then down. You know, it's been kind of bouncing around. And they're only supposed to make $6.82 next year. So for over 7 to 8 years, they have... 10% revenue growth or earnings growth over that time. So very, very slow. Yields about 2.1%. And that looks fairly safe. Actually, it looks like they have the ability to raise that dividend with a payout ratio of only 24%. And they tend to raise their dividend every single year. And so they're certainly likely going to be an increase in their dividend. So that's a positive. From a valuation standpoint, enterprise value to EBITDA, let's see where they are longer term. Actually, I don't have that metric on EBITDA, but EBIT, it looks like they are near the high end of their longer term average, at least their 5-year average, but they have traded at higher levels in the past. So I still think there's upside from there. I kind of like it. I'm actually kind of like it. You know, they're big in Japan, and Japan, I think, is some ways on a resurgence a little bit. Very little debt, ability to raise their dividend, pretty good valuation, and good chart, strong momentum. So overall, I would say if I'm going to do anything, I'm going to be adding to Aflac as opposed to trimming it because from a valuation standpoint, it still looks relatively cheap. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. You have a standing invitation to call and ask any money questions when it pops up. So to get in touch, you can always just give that number a call. As usual, is 888-99-CHART. That's how to reach us directly, 4 to 5 Pacific time, on Invest Talk. Alternative investments. Now, what you need to know before you buy, that's our main talking point today, but I have some others as well, including... earnings. What are earnings looking like going into the second half of the year? And is that a positive or a negative? Also, what are the changes that are going on in the technology industry? And what areas of the technology industry look overvalued and overhyped? And maybe certain areas that are maybe undervalued undervalued and underhyped in relation to their potential going forward. So there's certain areas that I think are frothy, and other areas that, while maybe not cheap, aren't not quite as risky long term and have just as much, if not more upside than other areas. So we're going to talk about that as well. And then lastly, how to protect yourself against cognitive decline as you get older, because this is an area that is, as a lot of baby boomers start to retire and get in their 60s and 70s, they become more prone to losing touch with their financial life and prone to fraud and abuse and mischievous things and just bad decisions overall. So we're going to talk about that, and I've experienced this firsthand. So it's something that's definitely near and dear to my heart, because I've seen family members be abused by those around them. So just a heads up on that. So anything money related, though, I want to hear from you. You know, those are the things I want to discuss, but ultimately it's about you. It's about what are your needs, what are your questions, what are your considerations in today's market. So let's take a quick look at today's market. We had the S&P up 24, the Dow up 135, the NASDAQ up 83. Overall, a very strong day in the market, certainly a solid bounce off of support from a technical perspective on all the major indexes. The worries about North Korea are at least abated themselves for one day. And the question is this a one-day phenomenon, or is it something that is going to bring us to new highs? And underneath the surface, it tells me this is probably more likely a one-day phenomenon than anything, but anything is possible as well. So I'm watching for a couple things. One is, do we close any point below today's lows in the S&P? Below today's lows. If we close below today's lows in the S&P, that's telling me that this is just kind of a dead cat bounce or a fake rally. And the market's kind of conditioned to buy the dip. And maybe it's another one of those continuations of the trend, because we haven't really broken the overall trend on the S&P, even though we have on the Russell 2000, but we haven't on the NASDAQ, we haven't on S&P, we haven't on the Dow. So overall, the chart's still looking technically in good position, especially after today, but we're still expecting kind of a second half rollover. It's just a matter of how much and when it finally hits. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question at 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hi, I'm calling in. A little interested about Shopify, S-H-O-P. I'm a growth investor, very young, 25 years old, so I'm open for some volatility. It definitely bled out a little bit today. All the stocks did, but this one went down, I believe, 8%. Curious if you think I should add to it. I currently only have about 2% investment in of my total portfolio into it. Thanks. I'll listen on air later today.
I was looking at Shopify, and this is a cloud-based e-commerce platform for small and medium-sized businesses. And this is something I know a lot of people that are in the website building space, and they love Shopify. It's a kind of a simple solution to create a store within your website where you don't have to do a whole lot to create the checkout process and list items and things like that and keep track of sales, etc. So it's a kind of a one-stop shop for a small and medium-sized business. Certainly, big retailers aren't going to use this. They'll build their own, and they need to have their own needs. But for small and medium-sized small businesses, it can be a good tool and a great tool for some. So, and they show the revenue growth that is expected as more and more people are trying to sell online and businesses are selling more online and finding ways to diversify revenue and make it done simply. You know, a year ago, revenue was growing about 99% in the fourth quarter of 2015. Well, this latest quarter, revenue grew about 75%. But both quarters, they lost a penny. So they're still not making money, but their revenue is growing, even though it's slowing to some degree. It's still very, very strong revenue. And their valuation is elevated, certainly elevated, 19 times revenue. There's no P ratio in relation to the earnings, but next year, because they don't make any money, but next year they're supposed to make 22 cents. It's a $94 stock. So based on that, you're talking a PE in the 400 to 500s. So it's extremely overvalued. Is it a good company? Should it be on your watch list? Absolutely. But as a value investor, I just can't justify buying at these levels. It's starting to look very, very toppy. I would buy this in the low 40s, but it's at 94 now, so I wouldn't do it.
Our podcast continues next. The process of investing is more than just picking stocks. Investing begins with savings, of course, and along the way, there are issues about taxes and then estate planning and on and on. KPP Financial clients have a ready resource of information about any and all of these personal financial matters. All they need to do is ask. Managing your money gets more complex every day, and there are more options than the average person could possibly comprehend. And when we're confronted with too many choices, research shows that people put off decisions, important decisions. Most times, that's not productive. KPP Financial's philosophy is the more their clients know, the more successful they'll be, and the more predictable their future will be. KPP Financial, serving the average investor, helping them find solutions. Now let's continue with the podcast. Now we continue with Invest Talk. Financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein is ready for your money question right now. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 25 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to give us a call, you better do it now. Now, alternative investments are those vehicles that are outside of your typical stock and bond markets. And in today's market where prices for stocks are pretty high and bond yields are pretty low, investors a lot of times are looking for alternatives. Now, alternatives or alts in the industry is what we call them, can be very broad ranging. It's not just precious metals, which is probably the most common alt, or REITs, right? It can be currencies, could be private equity, art, collectibles, etc. But they're not all simple and straightforward. They usually aren't, actually. Typically, they have higher fees, higher risks, and there can be tax consequences that are very different than your typical stock and bond income. And typically, they're also less transparent, so it's harder to know what's in them in comparison to maybe a mutual fund or an ETF. We kind of know what you're invested in. And they tend to be less liquid. A lot of times there's lockup periods, surrender charges, etc. A lot of money managers, wealth management firms, they sell these. We don't. But alts kind of have an air of exclusivity. Mainly because there's usually minimum net worth requirements. You can't just throw $500 into alternative, you know, an alt private placement fund. Usually minimums. Now, odds are you're going to feel the sales pitch from your financial advisor if they are commission-based, because that's how they make money, is they get a portion of their clients' assets in these things, and they tend to get nice commissions, both upfront and trailing as well. And they're going to tout the diversification benefits and potential higher returns of alternative investments. Now, you may already own some, like I said. REITs are a type of alternative investment, real estate investment trusts, precious metals, commodities. There's standard ways through ETFs and mutual funds that you can gain access to that. And even there's a lot of mutual fund strategies that trade futures or have kind of hedge fund exposure. So there's other ways besides getting into illiquid, high fee investments to get exposure to alts. Now, it's true over the from 1990 to 2016 period, if you sprinkled in about a 10% allocation to hedge funds and private equity, you did better than just stocks and bonds. But that's just one period. And it sounds like a long period, 26 years. But these things go in waves, so it does not necessarily mean that going forward, it's also going to outperform. And there's downside to these investments as well. A lot of, especially hedge fund private equity, they have a lot of leverage a lot of times. So if the economy gets bad, their losses tend to be exaggerated because of that leverage. So when you're looking into alts, understand the risks. Understand the high fees, carrying those high fees over a long period. The tax implications for any potential investments. And you must compare that to those of stocks and bonds over the long term. So the questions that you have to ask yourself, do you know what you're buying? Are you buying from a reputable source? Because a lot of these are private placement type of vehicles that are less regulated and can be difficult to really have a lot of transparent understanding of what you're investing in. And even the SEC and the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority have issued alerts to address some of these issues, basically saying you need to do your research. Will you be able to tap into the money when you need it? What's the liquidity of these products? Now, in the stock market, there's a lot of data on companies, on mutual funds, ETFs, etc. And that's usually not the case with alternative investments, especially private placement. So if you're going to put your money into them, do a lot of research, understand completely what you're buying, and make sure it's not more than maybe 10% of your portfolio. But I think the easier thing is to use the tools that we have today, ETFs, mutual funds, to gain access to these markets and increase diversification in your portfolio, and long-term adding, if it's good values at the current time, adding potential upside return. So you can add gold, precious metals, commodities very simply. You can add REITs very simply. And we use both of those in some of our strategies as well. So understand the risks and potential rewards. And alts can be very confusing. And just like anything, you always have to go in with your eyes wide open. Now, when you approach retirement, there are some complex decisions to make about your home. Should you sell it, downsize, fix it up? And, you know, I want to be a helpful source for you to answer some of your real estate questions. So you can get me a note, ask any basic questions. I am a licensed real estate consultant, so I'd be glad to answer your question. And if you like, just click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com, and I'll get right back to you.
The successful investor is not perfect, but is an independent thinker who pursues information and truth without bias and never stops learning. Asking questions, that's part of the process. Make your call right now with your money question. Financial advisor Justin Klein is here for you at 888-99-CHART or ask him privately. Just click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve. Justin. Steve has been mentioning a bond ladder for some of us smaller investors. Researching individual bonds is not easy. What do you think of the Guggenheim bullet shares, BSC, J, K, L, and so on? Effectively, those are theoretically bond ladders. Would appreciate your thoughts on the matter. Have a great day, and thanks for your show. Bye.
All right, great. What he's talking about is the set of ETFs that Guggenheim has released. and they're called bullet shares, and they are bond ETFs, and they have different maturity dates, 2019, 2020, 2023, et cetera, you know, going on down. I don't know when it ends, but they have a series of them, both high grade, meaning investment grade bonds, and then they have junk bonds. So obviously with the junk bonds, you're going to get a higher yield. The farther out you go, you're going to get a higher yield, and there's various levels of risks for all of them. And what this does is it allows you to pinpoint the maturity dates of whatever you are investing in. So when 2018 hits, I'm not sure when they wind down the 2018 bond bullet share ETF, then you're eventually going to get all your money back, I'm assuming by the end of the year, and then you can reinvest that money. So you're getting rid of any interest rate risk that you would have with a typical bond portfolio. Okay, so laddering a bond is certainly a strategy we use for clients. And what you could do with this is buy one that's a 2020, put a portion of your portfolio that's 2020 maturity, 21, 22, 23, et cetera, go out and you create a bond ladder. So 2021 or 2020 hits, you're going to get all that money back that you have invested in the BulletShare 2020 fund. And then maybe reinvest that in the 2027 or whatever the next year is and create a bond ladder like that. Now, that's a pretty diversified way that you can get a better yield without a ton of interest rate risk, as long as you know that you're going to hold those until maturity, like a typical bond. So it's not a bad way to go. Are you going to get great yield from it? Probably not. You know, the 2019 corporate bond ETF BSCJ that he talked about only yields about 1.65%. So it's certainly low yield. And as like I said, as you go out farther, you're going to get higher yield. You know, if you create a specific bond ladder, you can probably do much better than that. So that's something to consider as well. So I like them, but it needs to be weighed with the pros and cons. Your yield's not going to be fantastic, but if you're trying to create a bond ladder, it is a decent way to go. Not the best, but it's a decent way to go. 8899 chart, 8899242278. Now, we've had a rally in stocks this year on the backdrop of more optimistic corporate earnings, because of a Trump agenda, an economy that continues to create a decent amount of jobs on a monthly basis. You know, it's not gangbusters, you know, around 200,000 jobs or so, but it's still, when we're close to full employment, that's pretty good growth. And earnings had a pretty good quarter in the second quarter. S&P earnings grew 11%, and that's the second straight quarter of double-digit growth. And this is a lot on the back of energy prices recovering and the profits from energy companies recovering as well. And these are the fastest two quarters of growth since 2011, when earnings were roughly about where they are now. Now, more than half S&P companies topped forecast in the second quarter. That's the highest percentage since the second quarter of 2010. Even though the average upside surprise was only about 4%, long-term average is about 5%. So the upside surprise was a little lower than average. But the results were not strong enough to really give the full year projections for S&P 500 earnings a revision higher. In fact, for 2017, analysts are seeing earnings of $130.46 a share for the S&P for the full year. That's down 3.5% from $135.25 that was forecasted just a few months back, the end of April. So in 3 months, earnings expectations for this year have fallen 3.5%, even though the price of S&P 500 has risen 3.5% since that date. And forecasts for next year's earnings have come down 4% since March. And a lot of this has to do with energy earnings. They're still a little cautious about earnings growth, even though things are getting better from, you know, a year ago when prices of oil were in the 30s. Now we're in the mid-high 40s, $50 range. Things are a lot better for them. They've adjusted. They've been able to manage in this market. Now, one thing that is most concerning, and we've had a couple of these things happen, is earnings reports have come out. While good reports have been only modestly rewarded, stocks that beat both earnings and sales rose barely in the day after their earnings relative to the benchmark. If you look at companies that had worse than expected results on both earnings and revenues, they were sharply punished. So good news was barely rewarded. Bad news was punished dramatically. And this is a theme that I think is very interesting. And it shows that the market is priced for perfection. And it's the earnings have to continue at a strong clip. Otherwise, and I think that's going to be a catalyst for the second half pullback, is just we are priced for perfection from a valuation standpoint, and earnings are going to have a hard time really accelerating from here. Now, we're here for you, beginner or experienced investor, at 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime number.
Hello, Steve and Justin. I had a question regarding L Brands, ticker symbol LB. It seems like it's really come down a lot over the last year. It's pretty cheap on as far as a PE ratio basis, and its enterprise value to EBITDA is also pretty low, and it's got a pretty high dividend yield, but same store sales really haven't turned around completely yet. But I was wondering what your thoughts were on the stock and if it's something you guys would be interested in, and if so, what would kind of be a good entry point? Thanks. Bye.
I was looking at L Brands. It's the parent of Victoria's Secret and Bath and Body Works, along with Henri Bendel, and La Senz is another one of their brands, and Pink, obviously, which is associated with Victoria's Secret. So those are kind of the main businesses. Victoria's Secret, Pink, and Bath and Body Works account for the large percentage of their sales, and that's really what they're driven by. And Bath and Body Works has been very, very good. And Victoria's Secret has been hit mainly because of the discontinuation of swimsuits in Victoria's Secrets. So that has brought down the same store sales trends. And that actually probably won't really turn until next year. Those year-over-year sales trends won't turn positive probably until early next year because of the discontinuation early this year. So when they come out with earnings, the comps are difficult because last year they were selling swimsuits. This year they're not. But he's right. From a valuation standpoint, it's still very, very attractive. They're still very profitable. Their cash flow is still tremendous. Operating cash flow is about $2 billion trailing 12 months. Free cash flow is about $1 billion on a market cap of about $1 billion. Now, they do have about $4 billion in debt or so, with their enterprise value sitting at about 16. So you're talking about $4.5 billion, $4.3 billion in net debt. And that's really what the market, I think, is worried about. But I think it's totally overblown. They should be able to afford their dividend unless something dramatic happens. And I think it's a strong brand that has a lot of staying power. And this is a great long-term opportunity. You're listening to Invest Talk. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Donna from Los Angeles, and I have my Roth IRA that I've moved from one that was charging me front-end fees and transaction fees and all that stuff, and now it's sitting, not making money, and I'm really worried. What I'm worried about is the decision-making of where am I going to put this money. So I was looking, it's in E-Trade right now, which just sitting there. I'm waiting for my decision, and I'm kind of scrolling through a few, and I know you cannot make recommendations, but here is one. I've been looking at a few Vanguards, but this one is called Dreyfus. I'm not familiar. The letters are, and I'm going to give you the words for it, Potato, Edward, Suzanne, Potato, X. And it's an NTF, and I don't know much about NTFs. I just usually let someone else really invest for me in mutual funds, and I'd like to keep the mutual funds because I don't know that I you know, call every day and move my stocks around. I think that's what NTFs are about. So is this a good one, Dreyfus Mid Cap? What do you think? Thank you.
All right, she's looking at Dreyfus Mid Cap Index, and this is Investor Class, a fairly low fee for a mid-cap blend, so it's not really growth or value. It's kind of encompasses both sides of the spectrum. Now, anytime you're going to get into small and mid-cap funds, you're going to talk about high risk, certainly higher risk than the overall market, so be aware of that. So if you are a low to moderate risk investor, this is probably not the place you want to be allocating your money unless it's a very small amount of your portfolio, less than 5%. But if you are a high risk investor, then you can, this is an okay name. I would say it's slightly above average from a long-term perspective. The dividend yield is about 1%, not a lot of turnover, which doesn't really matter for you because it's going to be within a tax-deferred account. It's very well diversified. Even its biggest holding is less than 1% of the total portfolio. So it's very, very, very diversified. Only 3.3% are in the top five holdings. Extremely low concentration. So I don't really like that. So it's just very broad. Frankly, I don't love it. You know, it's just kind of above average, but not exciting. I don't like the valuations at this point. And long term, you'll probably do decent, but you're going to get a lot of volatility, especially at these valuation levels. So if you need help with it further, understanding your risk tolerance, I think that's number one. Before you jump into this or anything else, you can always give us a call or go on our website, take our risk questionnaire, and we'll help you get a sense of maybe what you should be doing with that. I think it was an IRA she was talking about. So that was Dreyfus Midcap Index PESPX. Now, the technology sector is an area that most investors love to think about, invest in, and chase, right? They love the exciting stories, and sometimes the stories are very valid and ripe for taking advantage of and making a lot of money in. And others, there's a lot of froth and overhype, and the odds of reaching those lofty levels of current valuations is a long shot. And in today's market, I think you have a little bit of both. And I'll tell you where I see the biggest opportunity in the tech space, and that's in cloud computing. And the reason is because startups, enterprises, both small businesses up to very large businesses, are trying to reduce high fixed costs associated with running IT hardware and software. And this is typically, and this is one of the reasons why IBM is struggling, it's because that's what they were in the past. They were the ones building out IT hardware within an organization and applying the software to it, managing that whole system, and allowing those companies to operate effectively. Well, it's all moving. It's all changing. Everything's moving to the cloud. You pay a monthly fee instead of one-time big setup costs. It's called SaaS, Software as a Service, and this is really transforming the business world. So if you're looking in the tech industry today, this is where you really want to focus. When you're talking about chips, I think they were at the high end of that cycle, and there's a lot of froth and a lot of overvaluation there. So if you're looking for opportunity, you want to be focusing on the SaaS space, Software as a Service. Time's up for the hour. The next date on Steve's checkup calendar is August 23rd. He'll be in San Jose all day on the 23rd of August. To reserve your hour with him, just go to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review section. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and the whole KP family, thank you for being with us. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis. and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.